uploaded my picture just to see what it felt like. A digital fixture in a world that seems so lifelike. So I type the way I feel inside that makes me wanna fight. And I try to not mistake love with anything that might feel like hype. A roll of the dice.
Welcome back to Dating Games, the modern relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps. And I'm delighted to be back with my wonderful co-host, Stephanie Foster, for one of our hosts episode. And I feel we have to address it. We started off this season so optimistic. I think you even suggested we start doing these twice a month. Yeah, what happened? Do you want to share or should I?
Yeah, honestly, it's like I go on tour, which means like we're on the road for 6 weeks. And for that 6 weeks, I am not a human being. And so I don't know what I was thinking we should ramp up. But I do still kind of believe in us if I'm not on tour.
Thank God. I'm so glad to hear it. I'm glad somebody does. I will say for you, the tour you're on, it's not you like on an ensemble kind of tour that's organized for you and the bookers do everything. It's like, no, you are planning a tour. You are managing the talent yourself. You are taking the bookings. You're chasing up payments. You're selling merch. Yeah, you're driving the car. Pretty full on.
I think the tour is really hard on me because it's not just one kind of exhausting. It's all the kinds of exhausting at once. So physically, like moving our luggage so often to new places, packing, unpacking all the sound equipment, mental exhaustion of like logistics and figuring out how to get where and if we can do it in our budget and all that kind of good stuff. And then it's emotional just because, you know, every night I'm telling comedy for 20 minutes, but I'm also talking about my dead best friend for the last 10. So it's just heavy. So yeah, after tour, I just was super, super run down.
Yeah, I get that. It's a lot. And, you know, llamas aren't meant to be carrying cases, big, heavy cases.
They're not. They're just meant to spit.
And so I'm glad you're back spitting with us. So tell me, how have you been behind the wonderful comedian? Like, how are things behind the scenes for you?
Behind the scenes, honestly, they're a little bit of a mess right now. After tour, I just was like run down to the point that I had like lost a ton of weight and just was super depressed. And then a few days after tour, my girlfriend broke up with me. And then a few days later, we got this huge grant. So I used my personal savings to pay off stuff for the business because the grant was coming. And then we were told we couldn't actually get the grant. So it just was like a hell of a 1-2-3 punch for me. And it really took me to a dark place for a minute. But I just like am very lucky to have amazing friends, amazing family. And like they just helped me get back on my feet for a few days. So I think I've just kind of been like, holy shit, what do I bring this up first? Yeah. So it's been wild.
Wow, bless you. And I've been there with grants or a whole thing. They're slow to approve, slow to pay you. Sometimes they don't pay you at all. It's a whole thing. Yeah, so I'm glad that you have other sponsorship and other things coming in. With things with Daniela, was that out of the blue to you or was it kind of tricky with the long distance of tour, I'd imagine?
It definitely like felt like the rug was being pulled out from underneath me. Tour was hard, but I expected it to be hard, you know, because I'm so exhausted from all of those different ways. I told her before I left, I'm not my best self on tour. Like, I'm so focused on this and I really need your support. And it just, we didn't really figure it out. And then as soon as I got off tour, she flew out to New York. We spent a few days together. She like expressed how worried she was about me and how much weight I had lost and all of that kind of stuff. We talked about it a little bit and she flew home and the next day called me and broke up with me.
Wow.
She just said she didn't know if she could be the support system that I needed with my eating disorder. which was like very frustrating to me. It felt like, how does my eating disorder have to do with our relationship?
Wow. Yeah, because on one hand, it affects every part of your life, but also, did she explain what she meant by that? Does she have like similar experiences that it might have triggered, or was there anything like that?
Yeah, she has a family member who struggles with that. But I think it's also just like the way she approaches worrying about someone or caring for them can be in like a very tons of advice at once, trying to fix it.
Ah, okay. So maybe she thought to herself, I don't have all the answers for this, therefore I'm going to run away, versus I actually don't need to solve your issues.
Exactly.
Wow. See, I've not been in that position, but also I think part of me kind of keeps myself out of it, where I don't tend to kind of talk about my eating disorder too much, or if I do, I'm kind of careful with it around new people in my life, particularly partners, because, you know, first of all, I don't want the analysis, right? I'm certainly never going to tell anyone about it while we're eating, because then straight away, and I'm not blaming them, it would be like very human to do so, they're going to start watching me eat. And that's going to stress me out in a way that I can't always articulate. And so I tend to kind of let people in very slowly. I certainly wouldn't expect anyone to like take on the burden of it, right?
Yeah, I think that's the hard part, right? Like, it's not something that I really brought up, but because I am public about the struggles that I face, and then I lost a ton of weight just because I was stressed out and run down from tour.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, maybe she didn't realize or didn't kind of fully know the extent of that until you're like then lying next to each other.
Yeah. I don't know. I think she didn't think I was taking it seriously enough because I wasn't as alarmed. Like, I've been dealing with this my whole life, so it's not alarming to me. I see that there's a problem. I do want to change that, like all of those things. So yeah, it's tough. It's like, how much are you responsible for as a partner? I think she kept saying, if I'm not part of the solution, then I'm part of the problem, and I can't stay around and be part of the problem.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. Maybe that was it. She, you know, she got overwhelmed. She thought, I'm not capable of this. You know, and that happens. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I guess that's quite common, but it's so disappointing from your point of view. And also to be like, I didn't ask you to solve this. I didn't ask for you to kind of, as she phrased it, be my like whole support system.
Yeah.
If anything, I'm going back on tour in another bit. Also, you don't live in the same state.
No.
Like, do you know what I mean? The support would only ever be so hands-on, even if that was what you were expecting.
I think the support is more coming from, like, obviously her love for me, but also, like, her fear for me.
Yeah, the worry.
Wanting to, like, fix it, aka thinking, like, I'm either fixing it or I'm not fixing it. It's not mine to fix.
Yeah, and sometimes that can be our reaction. I mean, this is certainly would be my personal experience on it. I've definitely been that person a lot when I was younger, where other people's emotions I didn't always know how to cope with, because I really didn't know how to cope with my own. And so sometimes things would kind of resonate with me, and then I would panic because I'm like, oh no, two times the emotions. I'm having feelings about relating to your feelings, and you're sad, and now I'm sad because I'm empathetic. And then you're just like, okay, well, what do we do? And As a young man, I think you're particularly encouraged to be like, solutions? Are we pushing it down? Are we pretending it's not happening? What's the strategy here? How can we quickly get you to stop crying before I start crying, and then we're really in trouble?
Yeah.
You still absolutely have the right to be disappointed. You know, maybe she isn't in the place to be there for you, and that's sad.
Yeah, I think the hardest part for me is I was really upfront and clear about my abandonment issues. And I don't know, like, she came back like a week later and was like, I miss you with every fiber of my being. I don't know if I made the right choice or not. and basically just like wanting to understand more about it to see if that was like something she could support or not.
Yeah. See, I don't know her, so it's tricky for me to say, but I know how I would receive that. And it would be a bit like, this isn't about you.
That's what it felt like to me, was like, why does this have anything to do with you? Like, I've had this problem before you. I've taken care of myself before you. Like, I wasn't asking for anything.
And I don't know. I wonder if the tour might have been a factor in it, and that you've been away from each other. I would imagine it's been trickier for you to kind of keep up regular contact with her. And then, you know, maybe she's counting down the days until the tour ends and you get to kind of get back to your more regular routine. And then you get back and she's worried about you and things are trickier than she thought, perhaps. You know, so she doesn't get to go back to the fairy tale. Because I remember when we talked about it before, you were very much in honeymoon phase together.
Totally. Such in a honeymoon phase. And like, I think that's what's hard, you know, like her wanting, I think any person, when someone leaves you, your dream is for them to come back and regret their decision. Or at least it's mine.
No, I think that's very natural. I think particularly when it's taking you out of the blue like this, you know, that exacerbates it even more when you're like, wait, hold on. Let's talk about it. Let's take a pause here.
That was my biggest complaint about the whole thing, was like, if I'm at a point in telling someone that I'm in love with them, a breakup does not happen in one conversation.
Yeah. I'm actually really glad to have the opportunity to talk about this. I'm obviously really sad about what's going on for you. I think this is a very common issue. And I sometimes wonder if it's partly a young person's issue, like it's something to do with our kind of digital lives, that, you know, I'm not blaming technology, but also like, you know, the conversation happened over a phone call. That's not ideal. But then also when you live in different states, I can see why that was the case, right? But I think there are factors like this where our digital lives play a part, where it is easier maybe to go kind of in and out of people's lives a bit more. And I was thinking about this because my mate Ace was kind of filling me in on something he had going on romantically. And, you know, the one bit I really didn't understand about it was that he blocked this guy. He kind of cut it off, blocked this guy on all social media, and then unblocked him. And really, I've never done that, and I've not always understood it. And I was like, okay,
Which part?
The blocking and unblocking, the blocking in the first place.
Okay, so the blocking I get, I don't get the unblocking.
Yeah, or when people do like partial blocking, that's the bit that confuses me the most. So they like block people on one space and then they get a message from them in another forum, right? Because we are very contactable these days. And I don't always understand that. For me, if I'm done, maybe it's a lot of counseling. I have a level of maybe scary self-restraint where like that person could send any kind of toxic thing to me. I'm just not going to reply. He was saying to me, well, it's, you know, if I'm really honest with you, like if I'm leaving them unblocked on certain things or if I'm unblocking them a few days later, I'm not ready for it to be over.
Oh, damn.
Right. And I was like, shit, that's now it's making sense to me. Because I think this is part of it, that now we do have the option to be like, I can't deal with the level of emotion I'm feeling towards this person. There's this button right there on my phone, right there in my pocket, where I can turn off communication with them for a few days. And I can tailor like the amount I do that. So maybe I block them on WhatsApp where we talk most of the time, but I leave them open somewhere else. So they kind of have to make a bit more effort to talk to me, but they still can, or I block them on everything. And then when I'm feeling less overwhelmed, I unblock them. And I think this is very, I can understand it, right, emotionally. I'm getting my head around it now, but also it's very stressful.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean by the digital landscape thing of maybe it encourages us to go in and out of each other's lives a bit more.
Ugh, that's such a good point. I mean, like before we had all this technology, if you broke up with someone, like that's fucking it. Like before you had to call at the right time and hope they were home and all of this other stuff. And it's like, I don't know, like the blocking for me is I'm trying to start fresh. Mm-hmm. And I know from like a brain science thing that not seeing your fucking face and your name and all the shit that you're doing is going to make me feel better. And so as hard as it is, like, it's like a ripping a Band-Aid off.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's that, like, yeah, taking the decision now to kind of look after future you. I can understand that. But I guess maybe that's, you know, still part of it, right? Where, you know, I'm not going to pretend like I know what the answers are with you and Daniela, but I don't know if things maybe would have been different if there wasn't the option to call, if she had to buy another plane ticket and travel all that way to have the conversation. Maybe there would have been more conversations about trying to make it work.
It's so interesting that you say that, because my biggest hang up of getting back together is I feel like when she left me, she created this gap and broke a bunch of trust and so on and so forth, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I'm a believer that the first breakup is always the hardest. And so yeah. A bit of my trust has gone, if not forever, for a while, if we get back together.
So because she created that gap, I feel like she should also be mending it. And when my parents came in town to help me get back on my feet, you know, my dad said something that really resonated with me. He was like, I'm sure all the words you're hearing right now are perfect. And that's great because you definitely need to hear that. But look at actions. What are the actions? And it's really hard for me to say that there have been any actions. Like, we've had conversations and, you know, she's the first person to check on me in the morning, throughout the day, all of those kinds of things. But we did that when you left. So that doesn't, like, I feel like a brat or a child for saying this, but I'm like, fucking win me back. Show me that you know what you left. I don't know. I don't know how else to put it besides
No. I don't think you're being a brat. I think, you know, I can really see where you're coming from. You know, she ultimately, like, yes, I think the one that ends it should be the one that takes the lead if they think you should be getting back together. I know for myself, I would find that very difficult for them to still be someone that I'm in communication with so much whilst I'm trying to unpack all the big feelings of the breakup. I don't think that would be helpful for me. And I've definitely been in the place where I've had a breakup and I mean, like, okay, well, I'm going to take some time. And the other person doesn't always like that. But equally, like, if we're not together, the obligations are instantly changed. You know, it's not a small decision to break up. And so if my kind of walls and boundaries come back up, you know, maybe someone might find that, you know, inconvenient or bratty, or my expectations of them changing to not, you know, be what they want, right? But it is what it is. Like, it's, things will change. Yeah. You know, for me, sometimes I'm a very kind of logical person, right, in my approach to relationships. And so sometimes, or my approach to feelings, I guess that's how I learned to process a lot of them. But that kind of feels right to me, that if we're not together anymore, I'm going to find it odd to speak to you more than, like, my close friends.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I kind of want to retreat to my friends and then speak to you a little bit less for a bit.
That's exactly where I got yesterday.
Okay, yep.
Oh, it took me, I feel like, so long to get there, but it just, at the end of the day, like, being with me is a privilege and you're getting all of the benefits of being with me and you're not my girlfriend. And I don't want, like, with what I've been presented so far, like, no, it takes more than a phone call to get me back. Like, had you flown back out here and apologized or, like, whatever the situation is, fine, but do something, send flowers, make a gesture. Like, you made a huge fucking gesture by breaking up with me. So I kind of need a huge gesture to get me back.
I think that's very fair. Yeah, because you're right. It's a massive gesture to have the breakup. And, you know, I'm sure it was something that she was fretting about and, you know, figuring out the best way to phrase things and all of that. And you'd want to see that level of effort the other direction as well.
Totally.
So no, I do get where you're coming from. And, you know, I think that's part of it, that whether people might think we're brats or whatever else, I agree. It is a privilege, like, to let somebody be that close to you. And, you know, I guess when I see people break up that are close to me, that generally is my number one concern. If they, like, get in a vague place, it can really draw out the heartbreak that sometimes the kind of creature mm-hmm. comforts of still keeping that person close can feel reassuring, right? Because you're having all these emotions about that particular person. So that is the person you want to talk to the most. That is the person that you're craving because of the loss of the relationship. If it's really going to be over, which, you know, we never kind of have a breakup and assume we're going to get back together. Maybe we shouldn't. If we do, you know, there's other relationships for us to focus on, you know, our friends, our family, and you have that, which is really lovely. So it's a lot. And no, I don't think you'd be unfair at all for kind of putting in boundaries again and being like, yeah, I actually need you to win me back. I need us to communicate less. I'm finding all this very upsetting. Yeah. And the other person, they can't, you know, I don't think they can steal their moral high ground from you. I don't believe in, like, massively shaming the person that breaks up, right? No, because I'm like, we all have the right to be in or not be in relationships, but also you can't be fighting to play victim. You can't both be like, oh, you're being unfair to me because I broke up with you and you're upset about it. No.
Yeah, that's, God, I haven't been able to articulate it that way, but that's exactly it. Yeah. So I don't know. I just kind of said that and, like, you know, we're not dating. We shouldn't, I'm no longer, like, available to you at any time. I'm not saying we can't communicate at all or whatever, but, you know, I need to be won back. And it was embarrassing to type, but I fucking did it. Okay.
No, I get that. And yeah, that, you know, access semi-revoked. Absolutely. You know, if you wanted to speak to me 24/7, you maybe should have thought about that before saying what you said. Yeah, there it is. What do you think is next?
I think the vibe with or without Daniela is, like, I am looking for my partner. I want to have a kid with someone. And so that's still the vibe. You know, I'm going to take my time to process what happened. But, like, again, like, I'm only saying all these things because I know I'm a fucking catch.
Yeah. You know, and I know that's hard won for you. You haven't always thought that way. So yeah, own it. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I don't know. I feel like I'm finally at the point, like, I think, you know, you feel so rejected and all of these things when someone breaks up with you. And I'm finally back at the point of, like, oh no, I'm a bad bitch. I have shit going on. I'm hilarious. I'm beautiful. Like, someone would be so lucky to be with me. I'm a really great partner. Like, mm-hmm. all of these things that I truly believe. So I feel like I'm getting back on just being able to, like, move from my core, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, you sound a bit like a TikToker where you're like, back on my grind every day, getting up, six eggs.
Anyways, expertise.
Bossing and balling.
Full instructions behind the paywall.
A goop of this and a goop of the other and we'll all be away.
I feel like that girl you run into from high school at the grocery store and you simply ask, how are you? And then she just tells you her whole life story. I feel like that's what just happened. How have you been? And I'm like, not great.
You know what, though? I'm exactly the same. I think people
tell me everything.
Well, I think people just get really used to it with me, right? Because they're not going to get fine as an answer when they ask me how I am. And you know what? I have hopefully enough comedic sensibility that I can make it a fun listening experience when I ramble to people. You certainly do. So yeah, I've been good. I mean, the main thing you've missed with me is just leveling up my singledom. So I just recorded this week a episode with Shaney Silver. We did a happy and single Christmas special.
I love that theme.
Yeah, so that was a lot of fun. It was funny though, because we're just like so hot on the anti-single shame when the two of us get together that I sort of got to the end of the recording and I was like, God, I hope we have sounded happy. We've definitely got the single part. And so, no, I think, you know, it's been nice kind of getting to know her and getting to do this podcast because I've accessed a level of comfortability with my singledom that I did not previously know.
How do you know you leveled up?
I think it's kind of taking off like just additional weights, right? That I guess the parallel for me is like, you know, mental health stigma, right? That's something I do a lot of work in. You know, sometimes you don't realize you weren't talking about certain things to do with mental health or being honest with people or getting help when you needed to, you know, all these ways in which stigma can hold us back. And a lot of the time it takes breaking through that stuff to be like, oh, look at me actually speaking up when I'm struggling. Look at me actually getting the support and being honest with people about what's actually going on. And so I guess it's kind of versions of that where I'm like, I'm trying to even think of the parallels. I guess it's stuff like, I don't tend to talk about it. I don't tend to talk about being single, you know, because it's not, I don't feel it's a disclaimer or anything. And then if I do talk about it, I never feel the reason to explain it or make a joke about it or anything like that. And so I think there's just little things like that where even just subtly, I'd kind of picked bits and pieces up. And so that's always a bit weird to admit to be like, oh, the single shame might have got to me a bit after all, even though I was pretty comfortable with singleness. So that's been a development. And I also, I had a, like an experience while I was in Edinburgh, which I, it's too long ago now and I've already told it. So yeah, pretty much since August, I've not really had anything happen. I've like turned the notifications off on my dating apps and I'm feeling chill with that.
I totally get that. Ugh, I remember being there too. And it's such a good place to be because it's like, whoever shows up better bring some fucking value to your life.
Yeah. I felt my standards have stepped up.
Yeah. Because otherwise, if you're happy, like, why else do you need someone?
Yeah. And I think there can be the inclination to even feel self-conscious about that, right? To be like, oh, I'm not looking. Oh, well, how do you expect to meet somebody? I meet people all the time. Like, you know, I don't think there's a requirement that we have to be torturing ourselves with it. And so, yes, there will be, I'm sure, times in the future where I'm actively looking again, but also I'm, yeah, dispensing with this idea that if I take my foot off the ball for a minute, then the one is going to miss me because I'm not into the idea of the one in the first place. Because among other reasons, what would be my chances of meeting them?
Yeah, I totally agree.
I live in a small country.
It's like, it's one of my affirmations that I say almost every single day. It's just like, what is for me will not miss me.
Yes. Yes. You know what I've been thinking about instead? I've been kind of thinking about relationships a lot. I mean, the podcast means that even if I'm not actively out there hunting, I mean, it's on my mind plenty, right? I think I'm always hopefully figuring things out a little bit more and more. And can I share a Trevor Noah clip that I saw the other day? So this is part of his Between the Scenes thing, which I've held off doing a similar thing. So do I do something like that with the podcasting? Because we have so many funny bits off mic and I'm like, not everything needs to be documented. Not everything needs to be work. Chill the fuck out. But here is a clip from him that I've been thinking about a lot.
Trending for a moment on Twitter about like the right to sex. Did you see this? Did you see this? It was one of the wildest conversations people were having. And I think part of it came down to there was a Washington Post article that came out saying that men in their 30s are having less sex than ever before, you know, in history. Just men are not having like... And I think it was framed as, and forgive me, but I'm paraphrasing, it was like framed as they're not having enough sex or not having as much sex as they would like to have. And the number has gone down dramatically over the past few decades. And the first thing I thought was like, well, you don't know how much people are having sex. You know how much people told you they're having sex. That's the first thing. But even if it is true, it was interesting to see the conversations that came afterwards, you know, because then some people were saying, this is why we need to have a right to sex in this country. You know, you need to have a right to sex. I found it interesting how the framing always talks about men and sex alone. No, but it never talks about two things. One, very seldom in society do we talk about how the expectation of sex was often set by a society controlled by men, and women were just subject to it, you know? And as that has changed, you would hope that now the dynamics would change. But it also makes it seem so one-dimensional. They go like, women, you know, men aren't having the sex that they want to have or wish to have. And I go like, how much sex do they think they're supposed to have? Let's start there. Secondly, like, do they think they're entitled to the sex? And third, and most importantly for me, and I really feel like we don't speak about this enough, is people don't realize how often men are experiencing a lack of intimacy. And the only place that they can experience that intimacy is through sex. We've created a society where men are so afraid to be vulnerable with each other, to be, you know, sensitive with each other, to care for each other, to love each other. You know, even saying that as a guy, you always have to change. It'd be like, you can't just say, I love you. You have to be like, I love you, dog. You know what I mean? You got to throw it like you can't just say it. And it's interesting because that is where I do feel women have done a much better job of being there intimately for each other. Not sexually, but intimately. And I think we take for granted how much in society men who say sex is the thing they're not getting are actually struggling with a lack of companionship, of intimacy, of being in a space with a person where they're sharing, you know, everything from serotonin to endorphins to what humans need to feel, you know? And I hope we can change that conversation just a little bit more. I hope we get to the place where guys go, oh, I actually didn't need the sex. I needed to be held. And I live in a society where it's hard to be held unless I'm having sex. Because as guys, you can't just go to a guy and be like, just hold me. True. And I hope the conversation goes there, you know, not just from, well, right to sex. It's like, no, sometimes you just want to be held. There are many sex workers who've talked about this, where they'll talk about how many men will pay them and then say, hey, can we just talk? Can we just sit on the bed and talk? And can you just hold me? Can you just... And I think if we have a little more of those conversations, a few more honest conversations, a few more vulnerable conversations, we may get to a place where it's not just about sex or no sex. It's people actually saying, oh, yeah, we are full human beings who require a full spectrum of you know, affection and affections towards us. And in the same way, for many years, great therapists have been saying that women have to be allowed to express that they want and enjoy sex. I think we also have to encourage men in society to go, hey, I want to express and enjoy intimacy despite or apart from sex. And yeah, maybe we can make it happen. What do you think? You have been? We can try it, yeah? We can try. Give me a hug.
Love you, man.
Give me a hug.
Great. You're cute, man.
I appreciate you, man. I appreciate it. I love you, man. I love you.
I've been thinking about that clip a lot because it's not that I didn't have some of those thoughts, but I'd never kind of heard it articulated so clearly. And that definitely is a disparity that I see.
Oh, yeah.
Around Halloween, I had two Halloween parties to go to, right? And I went one and then another straight after. My face was painted like a pumpkin. I'd done it myself. I think I was pleased with that. But it was like, but it was as comedic as you'd imagine. It was as silly. And I decided I wanted shimmery makeup. And that didn't maybe emphasize the pumpkin entirely, but it certainly looked stunning. So it was kind of like a bejeweled pumpkin. Anyway, this isn't the point of the story. And one of my mates was kind of hungover. He goes out a lot. And when he goes out, he's, you know, he's one of those guys that going out is very correlated with meeting women. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's very kind of encouraged. A lot of guys are like that. You know, I've been around him on nights out where I've kind of see that play out. And he kind of will approach a lot of women. And, you know, I think he's kind of respectful. Yet, you know, it's so kind of rewarded, the behavior in line with sex. You know, people will want to know, oh, did you go home with anyone? Mm-hmm. You know, it's never, did you have a nice conversation? And I think I try and actively be that person, right? I'm just being counterculture 24/7. And sometimes I think it'll take somebody by surprise, right? Because they're so used to this kind of macho interactions and the sort of questions we're expected to ask. You know, I was at this Halloween party, the second of the two. He was kind of hungover. We arrived at this party. Everyone was stoned. We'd obviously picked the wrong time. So I just took a seat and waited for people to sober up. I'm confident enough. And I think it's partly being sober my whole life. I'm like, no one will remember this anyway. It doesn't matter if I'm sat in the corner eating cake. I'll just wait until people wake up again. I'll just wait until they get to the chatty stage of high again. And then I'll... I'd be like, hey, how's everyone doing? I arrived half an hour ago. Did you notice? And so I'm sat chatting with him, eating cake, and out of nowhere, he just turns to me and he's like, I guess sometimes I just wonder, you know, I have a lot of success with women in one way, but I wonder if a woman will ever love me, really. I wonder if a woman will ever love me as much as my mum. Mm. A moment of such pure openness that kind of threw me. I probably like to not spit my cake out. Because look, I'm used to talking about feelings, obviously, but I wasn't expecting that out of nowhere. And
yeah,
that's obviously the example that comes to mind, right? That we're also encouraged to prioritize sex. So I don't think that's just a male thing, right? Maybe us more. But I think that's in general sex. Everything is so sexualized. Sex is used to sell all kinds of products, whether they relate to it. The vast majority of the time they don't. And other stuff is left behind. And, you know, that moment was, oh, someone close to me is realizing that in real time. You know, clearly this is not the first time he's thought about it, that the thing that we've been so encouraged to pursue and prioritize, and it's sex, 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 doesn't fill everything, doesn't really cut the void. And the other stuff is so important.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because like, even when he was saying it, the audience would laugh and was uncomfortable. Even when he was like...
Oh, you mean Trevor or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just showed like how uncomfortable men and women are with men needing intimacy outside of sex.
Yeah. And I sometimes think I'm kind of shielded from it because I think I do a pretty successful job of not having anyone expect me to be that person, right?
Yeah.
Like if you get to know me for any period of time and you think I'm not going to talk about feelings, I don't know if you've been listening. I talk about it and it's not an exaggeration. I am so often that friend to people in my life, and particularly my male friends, where they talk feelings and they talk relationships and they're open about certain things they don't talk to their other guy mates about. You know, that's a privilege, but it also kind of worries me. You know, that's why it was like so on my mind seeing that clip from Trevor to see it so articulated and be like, yeah, yeah, this is so widespread. I do love your reaction to it, that you're such a comic. You're like, so I have thoughts on the audience interaction with that clip.
Yeah.
the laughter and how it spread across the room.
Yeah. I think we're moving in the right direction. I think you're right. But I also wonder, like, what is needed to make that more comfortable? Is it just like seeing it and seeing what it looks like in real life and in practice? Or like, what would move the needle for men to not feel so uncomfortable? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I think it's strange to even think about sometimes, right? Because I guess you can talk about it from a representation perspective, where a lot of the time we're kind of like gaslit through our media into thinking that men don't cry, that like you maybe have one or two excuses in your life and then you're allowed to. Can't tell you how many times I've like been chatting with a mate late into the evening and they've got upset and I've got them tissues or I've given them a hug or held them or whatever different kind of level of being there for them. I can't tell you that I've seen that as many times on telly. I don't know, it's tricky. And I think sometimes it's like a fear of kind of, you know, I definitely grew up around the sort of, you know, gay being used as an insult and all sorts of things being gay, when it was actually just like being sweet, being vulnerable,
yep,
being silly. The way that men police each other, and hopefully, you know, from what I hear, that is less a thing for young people now. But there's still this policing. And I think that's the big thing that needs to stop, is men policing each other's behavior so much.
Yeah.
I can tell you a funny example. So the crazy, crazy school I did the last 2 years of my schooling in, we did some special episodes about racism on Mental Podcast, if the listeners want to hear more of the extent of this place. But the example that springs to mind is there was a term, like a slang term, that was used quite commonly called bird gay. And I had never come across this before. I'd gone to like a city center mixed gender school. This environment was predominantly male just up until the last 2 years when I joined. was a very kind of machismo-y kind of insular environment, right? And very into rugby, very, you can kind of get the picture, right? Mm-hmm. And Bird Gay, it turns out, meant if someone was not prioritizing their friends enough, essentially. So let's say you got a girlfriend and you were hanging out with her in a way that was perceived as too much because you weren't seeing your mates as much. Or okay. You were hanging around with girls in general. Maybe you were interested in one of them. Maybe you weren't. That certainly wasn't something that, given that most people there had been in an all-boys school up until that point when it went co-ed in the last 2 years, but that wasn't a context a lot of people had, whereas I'd always gone to mixed-gender schools where I'm like, of course I have female friends. What do you mean? And so Bird Gay was this kind of all-encompassing term. And it's funny because essentially, like, you, another way of looking at it is it's a derogatory term which was used when guys maybe missed their friend and wanted to challenge, like, oh, I wish you were hanging out with us today versus your girlfriend or that other group of friends that may include girls or whatever else. Kind of that's why I'm reminded of it. It's also a ridiculous term, because it's such a kind of oxymoron. Bird as in female in this context. Gay as in being into people of your own gender. The combination is real strange. To essentially be called gay for having a girlfriend and spending time with her is really a kind of mental loop-the-loop of toxic masculinity.
Yeah, I really had to follow you there. I was like, excuse me, what?
Yeah, and the irony of actually if guys were more honest with each other, a lot of the time that did mean, like, we miss our mate. Don't drop us because you've got a girlfriend, which is a perfectly legitimate thing.
Yeah.
But it has to be turned into a homophobic slur rather than express that vulnerability.
Do better, man.
Yeah, and obviously all the actual gays are like, what? Do I need a girlfriend now to be gay? What the hell is going on?
The rules are changing.
So I think that's a kind of an example that is both shocking and silly and sad. Like, that's the place we're in. That's not a recent story, but...
But still.
Yeah. Oh. So I'm glad that Trevor's talking about it. I hope he solves it. Is that too much pressure? Too much expectation?
Yeah, right before your show ends, just solve that quick one for us, Trev.
But no, I think a lot of the answer is talking about it and is acknowledging it. And so that's why I wanted to, like, talk about it with you today. Because even just hearing it phrased in that way actually was very helpful to me to, like, put things together in the same way I talked about, like, that conversation with Ace and being like, oh, the blocking and unblocking is you're not ready for it to end, for the communication to actually be cut off. You intended it to be temporary.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, like, I don't know, everyone's going to go about healing differently. Everyone's going to go about processing differently. So, like, you just got to let people do it their way.
Yeah. And so I guess we start to wrap up then. So an emotional episode, but I'm so glad that you're back. And it was lovely to catch up with you, even if not all the news was good news.
Yeah, but...
You finished the leg of the tour. Our careers could always be relied on, right?
It was so successful. We got sponsored for another leg, which is great. Mm-hmm. And, like, there's no bad news. There's just news and next steps, you know?
Well, we will finish up there then. Thank you so much. And, yeah, we'll get to planning the next one.
Okay, see you soon, Bob.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening.
For the full experience, you can join our subscription on Apple Podcasts to access extended ad-free episodes. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta.
The music is Digital Damaged by me, Emma Becco.
We're proud to be an independent production.
And leaving a quick review is another way to support the show.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.